Hi all, welcome back. Tonight, Simon and I are taking a bit of a different direction. We are looking at primary source document from the ancient history of Etna from back in 2015, inspired in part by a blog post that both of us were looking at recently with regard to Harvest Bible Chapel. Those of you who keep up with evangelical news will be aware that a big name pastor of a big denomination with big money was recently terminated. Simon, thanks again for your time. We're taking a bit of a hiatus from what we were going to talk about originally to trace some abusive language, some self-serving tactics of church, what would you say, church leadership, people behaving badly.
Yeah. I actually kind of stumbled onto this column or post on Julie Royce's website or her blog. Julie Royce was a radio host. I believe she had a position connected with Moody Bible Institute, and she was terminated from that position. They had a parting of the ways because she had been questioning, I think there were a couple of issues. One of them had to do with faculty members at Moody Bible Institute deviating from their position of inerrancy, of scriptural inerrancy. And another one had to do with financial discrepancies or even improprieties. And so she questioned that, and I think there was some pressure on her. I'm working off of memory here, but I think there was pressure on her to keep quiet about it, and she didn't. And so then they had a parting of the ways. But she's a pretty straight shooter. I think she's a reporter by trade. I think that was her training and background. So she's not only had the radio show and is a talk show host, but also writes. And she, the last big thing she did was a very lengthy expose on what had been going on at Harvest Bible Church. This article made it to World Magazine a couple months ago, but it was a rather lengthy investigative process that she went through. And it was a long article in World, and interviewed a lot of people. And long and the short of it is, there had been problems at Harvest. Harvest was sort of a quasi-denomination, but the figurehead was James MacDonald, and he had a nationwide radio program called Walk in the Word, and had been around for a number of years. But this, like I said, quasi-denomination, it was a confederation of churches that belonged to this association, and there were 12 affiliated churches in the Chicago area, but they had accrued like a $42 million debt, and there were financial discrepancies. There were accusations of MacDonald being abusive, and there were also questions about his lifestyle. He had recently built like a 6,000-square-foot house in the Chicago area, and 10-car garage and all that stuff. So she had a lengthy investigative report that was published in World Magazine, and as a result of her investigation and making comments about it, Harvest Bible Chapel / James MacDonald initiated a lawsuit against her and against a group of, I think it was four or five people that had run a blog called The Elephant's Debt. And this was a group of former elders and their wives, former elders of Harvest, who had left the church some years back and were going public and trying to put pressure on the church to acknowledge their wrongdoing and to be open and disclose what was going on financially. So long story short, this was on Julie Royce's blog, this guest post, and the post was written by a fellow named Wade Mullen, and he had been a pastor in his previous life, and now I guess he's involved in leadership training or has some sort of counseling job. I can't remember exactly, but
I believe he's the director of the MDiv program at Capital Seminary and Graduate School.
Oh, okay. He's a director. Yeah, he's got a faculty position. Right, that's right. But anyway, this post that he wrote is titled "Deciphering the Language of Harvest Bible Chapel," and so some of the concerns that he has comes out of his leadership training. He's got a doctorate in leadership, so I'm assuming that this has informed his ability to read and to assess this kind of stuff. But Harvest Bible Chapel / James MacDonald came out with a statement to defend themselves in the wake of Julie Roy's World Magazine article. And so this defensive piece that they put out was dissected by Wade Mullen.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, I found it to be very, very insightful, and very appropriate. And it forms a sort of a pattern. There's a pattern to these kinds of statements and these modes of defense when organizations are being criticized, and it appears that they have done some things that are not on the up and up, and so rather than admit to it, mm-hmm. they go into defense mode.
Yeah, and that seems to comprise, like you called it, a pattern. There's sort of common features of these defensive statements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Aspects that different groups in different circumstances will use. Some of it reminded me of statements put out by Willow Creek when everything was coming to a head with Bill Hybels.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to cite Willow Creek, the Willow Creek Association, and also Mars Hill,
right.
Mark Driscoll's
yep.
church.
Mm-hmm.
That when there were things being questioned and former elders, people who had been, actually, some of them had been sacked, some of them had resigned,
mm-hmm.
but when they began to question and were insisting on transparency, then the leadership of the church goes into defense mode, and they do two things. They write things to make themselves look good, and then they try to tarnish the reputations of the critics. They try to silence them.
Right.
And along with that, they do things like discounting or minimizing
mm-hmm.
to poo-poo the concerns,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time try to paint themselves as these ultra-concerned, diligent leaders who did everything they could and yet couldn't come to a meeting of the minds, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and they also try to elicit very specific behavior from the congregation or tell them, often in a roundabout way, what's expected of them now. They're expected not to investigate for themselves, to take the leadership's word for it, and to go on serving quietly in order to prove that they're good little sheep, yes, and loyal, and not like the angry, bitter, disaffected people who are lodging accusations.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's a couple of things that I think bear quoting or referring to from this post by Wade Mullen. First, he quotes from the Harvest Statement, and I believe this came out probably end of December or maybe early January, so not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it came out, like we said, in the wake of Julie Roy's article in World Magazine.
Right, and before James McDonald was terminated.
Exactly, and that's only happened in the last couple weeks.
Right.
So he first line that he quotes is this. And this is from what Harvest wrote as their statement of defense. It says, "It is a sad day when once credible Christian publications consider the opinions of a few disgruntled former members, already rehashed ad nauseum, of greater weight than the carefully expressed viewpoint of a plurality of local church elders." So I'm assuming that the once credible Christian publication is World Magazine. Now, Christianity Today weighed in somewhat, but they may be included in that, but this is largely directed at World Magazine. So that's kind of the first swipe, is calling it once credible Christian publications. And then it's this type of language where the majority is pitted against the minority. So he says, the opinions of a few disgruntled former members, then that's contrasted with plurality of local church elders. Now, I jotted down in the margin there, truth decided by majority. Well,
mm-hmm.
of course, you don't decide truth by majority, right?
Right. Well, go ahead.
I was going to say that they're described right away as disgruntled former members.
Right.
So now you go ahead.
The qualifiers they choose are quite interesting. So it's opinions, and opinions can be a leveling word, but here it's meant to be, well, opinions are like anything else. Everyone has one, therefore they don't inherently have credibility.
Right,
and they can't claim that they don't have their opinions or their take themselves, but they choose a different word. They choose viewpoint. And then they qualify it with carefully expressed, which you're meant to then go back and read into the opinions of a few disgruntled former members, that their opinions aren't carefully expressed. You know, they're either emotional or slapdash, or they only have the opinions they have because they had a falling out with the church, or it's all personal and subjective, whereas what they do is careful and qualified.
Exactly, and I have to throw this in too. It's more than just opinion. Mm-hmm. Now the things that the Harvest Bible Chapel is referring to in that statement, there may have been opinions included in that, but there were also facts.
Right.
There were also events, facts, conversations. There were things that were documented, so it wasn't just opinions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure opinions weighed into it, like they might have said, in our judgment, Harvest should disclose this, or in our judgment, they shouldn't be allowing James McDonald to do X, Y, Z. I'm sure those were woven in. However, much of it was not opinion. It was, like I say, the setting forth of financial figures, statements that were made, that sort of thing. So not opinions is misleading.
Mm-hmm.
And then that little throwaway phrase, already rehashed ad nauseum.
Right.
You know, like we've been over this and over this, and you can't get anywhere with these people, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty snarky, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, as Mullen points out, right on the heels of that, he begins to comment, and he says, even though the story was about specific wrongs done to others, they brought attention to their own pain. So the first thing is it is a sad day when one's credible, blah, blah, blah. So he goes on to say, this tactic is called supplication and is meant to cause others to grant them the compassion and support people would normally give to the wronged. And then he goes on to make reference to a tactic that he calls tarnishing. And so to tarnish the reputation of your opponent or the people that disagree with you by innuendo or some, you know, sly criticism, you know, to do that, if you can somehow tarnish them, then you can reduce their credibility.
Mm-hmm.
So he discusses that for a couple of paragraphs. And then at the same time, they use another tactic that he called polishing. And so what they try to do is improve their standing with the public, try to get public approval by suggesting that they're credible and they're careful. And so that gets back to their carefully expressed viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And how much, you know, how there's an emphasis placed also on the number of them.
Right.
Let me go to the next thing that he quotes from them. Harvest Bible Chapel has owned its mistakes and endured to become a happier, healthier church whose members recently pledged financially in their walk, work for Christ, and in their promise to share Christ with others at unprecedented levels.
Wow. We're moving so forward. Course, hurry.
Yeah, so you know, this, we've claimed to own our mistakes. Well, gee, do the people who have been offended and who say there are issues, do they agree to that? You know? don't you think that their point of view on that should somehow weigh in?
Well, but they've already communicated that those people don't matter. Mm-hmm. That the Christian publication, the once credible Christian publication, was supposed to dismiss them out of hand because everybody knows who and what they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but to say we've owned our mistakes, but have you apologized and made things right with the people that are telling you that there are problems here, that are trying to get you to own up to what you did and to disclose, you know, to open the books and to disclose what has gone on? Have you made it right with them? Well, no, because far from owning up to your mistakes and apologizing, there was actually a lawsuit initiated against those people. So,
well, perhaps that's the effect of the phrase rehashed ad nauseum. The implication is that these people can't let go, so maybe they wouldn't be willing to acknowledge when Harvest has owned its mistakes, even if it has done. So it makes it all about the elders' perspective, and that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, he talks about the use of the word mistakes rather than sins or errors or anything else that's somewhat stronger and more appropriate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can make reference to the last paragraph. I want to say something about that, because he highlighted, I think he counted 153 words, and so in his post, there are four paragraphs that are blocked off that are quotes from the statement put out by Harvest, but the last one I want to mention here, it says, "We have chosen the high road and refused to engage in public assault on people we once served closely with who just can't seem to let it go, even after all these years. The elders are privy to many grace-filled private attempts to reconcile, extended in hopes that these unhappy Christians would find peace."
It's really bad, because that's exactly what they've done.
Yeah, this is there's a lot packed in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's the attempt to stonewall, or to tell people to keep out of it, or to cop out by saying that, well, we can't talk about it, we can't defend ourselves, we can't get into this because it's all confidential. But trust us, you know, behind the scenes, we did everything we could, and we were completely on the up and up. Yeah, we've chosen the high road.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they use things like private attempts and refusing to engage in public assault. So that's a convenient way to keep from having to explain yourself, to explain discrepancies, or mm-hmm. to defend yourself against the people who have been injured or who have been wounded, and say, no, things haven't been made right yet.
Mm-hmm. But it's also not entirely true. They won't debate the issues or address the issues that these people have publicly, but they are more than happy to take swipes at them or try to discredit them in these subtle ways.
Yeah, good point. Exactly. Yeah, you can say, we refuse to engage in this in public, but then in your descriptions or in your terminology, you can do it in a subtle way. You can undermine them or actually paint them in a negative light.
Mm-hmm. And you know, try to make it all about their emotional state or their discontent, these unhappy Christians. Well, that's sort of making it their problem, their fault. I mean, those people who are exhorting or urging Harvest to do the right thing. Well, they're just unhappy. We're not quite sure what their problem is, but no, you've done something wrong.
I've got to read from Wade Mullen's column here, because he puts it better than we could just ad-libbing it. But he puts it this way, quote, "This rotating of the map gave others the impression that the organization was taking the difficult high road of pursuing peace, inviting reconciliation, maintaining confidentiality, letting go of the past, demonstrating love, promoting unity, while also giving the impression that those speaking out had taken the easy low road of pursuing revenge, rejecting reconciliation, spreading gossip, harboring bitterness, demonstrating hate, promoting division.
And might be unstable or emotionally disturbed," I would add that.
Yeah, they just can't seem to let it go.
And they're unhappy.
So we've chosen the high road, and then by implication, they haven't. We've refused to engage in public assault. By implication, see, that's what they do. We're willing to let it go, but they're not. And these are unhappy Christians. But our hope is to have peace, but these people are just unhappy Christians, and, you know, they're just intractable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he also says, he also makes comment about the expression, "even after all these years." Mm-hmm. Let me read what he says about that. Quote, "They have never refuted the substance of the concerns raised by the former members or journalists," and of course that's Julie Royce, "only their right to raise the concerns which they suggested no longer had relevance since they were handled so long ago." Let me read that again. "Concerns which they suggested no longer had relevance since they were handled so long ago. I call this tactic distancing. Knowing people tend to care more about recent and current wrongs, the organization gave the impression that concerns were in the distant past. This also fit their narrative of becoming a happy, healthier church." And so next to that paragraph, I wrote yes and underlined it twice, because I've seen this in my situation and in others where, well, that was a long time ago. Well, that was last year now. Or, well, we can't go back and try to fix that. So there's this attempt to use the fact that a number of months have gone by to just sweep it under the rug, or coerce you into letting it go or somehow imply that you've got a problem because it still bothers you. And look at, you know, it's been a year ago now or a year and a half ago. Why don't you just get over it? You still there?
Yeah, the focus is on moving on, not only because you can keep the ignorant people in the congregation in the dark or focused on other things, but it's convenient for you if you can deflect and say, this isn't relevant, therefore not only do I have to deal with it, I don't even have to acknowledge that you think it's a problem because it's old news.
It's old news, and in fact, isn't this what some significant political figures in the United States have done over the last number of years? There was one couple who lived in the White House who were notorious for that. They used delaying tactics. They stonewalled documents that were subpoenaed and other information that was by court order supposed to be disclosed to court officials or to judges. They would dribble it out and they would delay. So then finally, you're so many months down the road now that now they can say, well, that's old news. Well, that happened a long time ago. Or what can we do about it now?
Yeah.
We shouldn't worry about this now. That happened months ago.
And they have plenty of willing allies who are happy to fill the space with other more recent stuff, even if it's far less significant.
Sure. Yeah, it's a real trap because we all have heard about the soundbite mentality and how our attention spans are about 5 minutes long and how bad that's gotten in recent times compared to a generation or two ago. But yeah, that can be a real weapon or a real tool for corruption. You know, that if the heat's on me and I've done something immoral or illegal, I just drag out the investigation. And then if enough months go by, I can just count on the fact that, well, it happened a long time ago. So
nobody will be interested. Yeah.
Yeah. Just forget about it. So, of course, then reflecting on this letter by Wade Mullins, I guess we should call him Dr. Mullins, right?
Mullin, yeah.
Yeah. Reading that reminded me of some of the issues that I experienced with the classes and with the former council at the church where I served, and even with the letter that they had sent to the congregation. And I think, actually, without even talking to each other, you were reminded of that letter, too, after reading this post by Dr. Mullin, am I right?
Right. I mean, several of the documents you could go and trace through the spin, but I thought the letter to the congregation was perhaps the most relevant. It's got the most examples, I guess, of the different aspects we've been talking about as far as, you know, trying to boost your own standing and cut the adversary, the opponent, the naysayer.
Right.
Naysayers, named or not, cut them down in people's estimation, especially in the estimation of those people who don't know any better. And a lot of the vagary is also an important aspect of spin that I don't think Dr. Mullin touched on it as much, but that comes up a lot in the letter. Keeping things vague and saying, well, we can't really go into that, so you're just going to have to take our word for it on this sort of general, opaque, non-informative level.
Right. They don't say enough to be specific so that they could be contradicted or refuted. But yet, while they say, well, we can't talk about it and we have to be all confidential, they do that while they're saying things that are derogatory about their opponent.
Right.
We can't talk about this and we can't get into any criticisms, but here's what's wrong with this guy. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Well, and the people who have opposed us, we can't say what their criticism actually has been or we won't. But we're going to generalize and insinuate that it's gossipy or just negative or they
or
say
irrelevant.
That. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so what they do is try to provide some sort of defense in a roundabout way with no details, a defense against allegations they never name, but try to generalize about and in the process misrepresent.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because it reminds me of a judge who served in that church, and this judge looked at some of these letters and some of their documents and raised that very issue of how inappropriate that is to make charges and accusations or to say that they're there, but to not be specific and not defend them and just say, yeah, but trust us. So maybe what you should probably say something about the letter that we refer to, when it was sent out and what the purpose of it was.
Okay. Well, I wasn't there, right? Where was I at the time? Well, I think I was over here. I was over mm-hmm. in the UK. I don't think I came over till a few days after it was actually posted. But what happened was, this was supposed to be the first formal epistle to the congregation, letting them know what had happened, and you were served with the Article 17 papers back on November 5th. But of course, the special meeting of classes to okay all this didn't happen until the start of December. But in the meantime, between that classes meeting and the time of this letter, you and the council were still finalizing the termination agreement, the terms of which I don't right. quite recall. But one of them, of course, was that there was no disparaging remarks made by either party about the other, and also that right. you and the council were to jointly work on a communication to the congregation. Well, the day you signed that termination agreement, this letter, ostensibly written by the council, and it stated on the letter from the council to the congregation, was already in the post, and a copy was exactly. not sent to you.
Exactly. And so let me repeat that in case anybody's listening got distracted in the last 30 seconds. Part of my termination agreement, which included severance pay and when I was supposed to be out of the parsonage and all that kind of stuff, part of that termination agreement was very explicit in that a communication to the congregation was supposed to be drafted by the council and by me. So we were supposed to come up with a mutually agreed upon statement about why I was leaving and so forth. And so the day that two of the deacons came by and had me sign the termination agreement, that very day, this thing was in the mail. The letter to the congregation from the council was in the mail. In mm-hmm. fact, I found out about it because I actually got a letter in my mailbox. It was a return to sender because it had the wrong address. And so then I got that letter, and then I realized that there had been a group mailing to the congregation, which I was not apprised of.
Mm-hmm.
But like I say, this thing that came to my mailbox, return to sender, told me that the council had sent something. And then I got two communications from people within the church that got the letter saying, have you heard about this?
Yeah.
And so then, of course, I got the letter. Somebody sent it to me by email or something like that. And sure enough, the date was December 17. And so it had already been written and in the mail when I signed the agreement. So the termination agreement was violated before I even signed it.
Right.
which is weird in itself. Oh, and also, we're forgetting. It says, the heading says, Letter to the Aetna Congregation. And then right next to that, it says, From the Council.
Right.
However, the council did not write the letter.
Right.
One of the church visitors wrote the letter, and we have referenced this guy before. His initials are KM. He wrote this thing, and I got that. I had figured that out, but then I had it confirmed from one of the elders on the council who later left the church.
Right.
But he confirmed to me a bit later that, in fact, this man, this pastor, had written the letter on behalf of the council. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a couple of tells in the writing, not least of which is his fondness for hyphens in interesting places.
Yep.
But it was good to proper to get confirmation from an insider that the council didn't write this.
So I had to say, you know, in being reminded of this letter and with the prospect of thinking it over and discussing it again here, I read it over, looked it over last night, and I just put a comment on the bottom of the page. This thing has not improved with age.
Right.
I remember when I first read it, I thought this is not accurate. It's distorted. I'm not going to call the person who wrote it a liar, but it is inaccurate and distorted. And it's bad enough that people who know what went on, if they signed off on it, I would have to say it's dishonest. Now, again, I won't accuse him of that because he wasn't there. He's only going off what he's been told. But I can say without fear of contradiction that this letter's inaccurate and it's distorted. And it's also, frankly, self-serving in the mode which Dr. Mullen described in his assessment of that communication by Harvest Bible Church.
Mm-hmm.
It's self-serving and it's written with the intent to make the counsel look good and justify themselves, but at the same time make the person that they got rid of, to paint him in an unflattering light.
One thing I was thinking of as I was rereading it, you said that perhaps it would be too strong to accuse the writer of being dishonest because he's going off of what the counsel told him. But a lot of the emotional or subjective terms about the pain, frustrating, I'm sure that describes his experience of it, but the pain, the agony, the seriousness, the depth of everything, and the hard work, he doesn't know any of that, and he didn't experience any of it, and I'm not sure who told him to include all that, because I, of course, don't think any of this was painful. It all happened in quite a hurry, and they didn't know what they were doing. So a lot of it, after all this time, just really comes across as totally disingenuous.
Right. Yeah, it is disingenuous. I will have to say, at least, he is at least accountable because he didn't do his homework.
Mm-hmm.
So he's violated the ninth commandment, whether he intentionally tried to deceive or not. He's violated the ninth commandment on the basis of the fact that he didn't do his homework.
Well, and could he have said from his own experience in the meetings that he thought this was painful for them? I'm not sure. They didn't act like it was painful, because otherwise I think they maybe would have thought about it more or taken their time before they went ahead and did it. Because you didn't get the full 3 weeks of your suspension.
Yeah, I think that at least one person on the council was in his ear or insistent that he include these kind of statements or these kind of sentiments to deflect any potential criticism or fallout. Because by this time, I was already saying that this happened way too fast. And so were some other key people who were in leadership. Some of them who didn't agree with it were also saying that this went way too fast.
Right.
And so he even used a word in this letter that was from me, that because I had said this was a hasty decision.
Right.
So to deflect that and to try to get around that, then he wants to go back to 2008 and he wants to talk about how hard they worked on it and how long-standing, and, you know, those kind of words.
Right, so he has the sort of emotional component. They didn't really want to do this, and they're agonizing over it, and the sort of objective claim that actually this has been going on for a long time, and this was just the last straw. It's not that anyone wanted to do this or jumped to do this at the first sign of trouble.
And quite a bit of that is frankly a distortion.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, about the fourth paragraph down, after he puts in the disqualifiers about how it's confidential and we can't talk about it, then he leads off the fourth paragraph with, "We can say this, colon.
Yes.
This process has been long. Starting in 2008, the elders began noticing problems and addressing concerns." So, of course, right away, the way my mind works is, which problems, which concerns?
Right.
And I write in the margin, I write down inaccurate.
Right. Yeah, that's what I put.
Nothing going on in 2008. There were no elders noticing problems and addressing concerns in 2008. That's not true at all.
Mm-hmm. But they can, he/they can assert it and not explain it because there's nobody there to contradict them now. Mm-hmm. And people have been discouraged from asking questions because of the claim about Christian policy. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the sake of everyone involved. So if you're going to be as respectful of Christian policy and confidentiality as we are, you're not going to ask questions or try to get any of these claims verified.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. And if you ask questions, you raise issues, then what? You're a troublemaker, a gossip? I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that the vagueness, the vague plurals, problems, concerns, in the next sentence, these serious matters, and then that's sort of elaborated on by a large number of deep, serious, and long-standing frustrations. But none of these things are enumerated, explained, defined.
Right.
Yeah. What is
any of these frustrations? You actually have former council members, elders, who served two different times on the council with me. refuting this, saying they knew nothing about it, or overtly disagreeing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the worst distortions is the sentence before that. Now, again, we're in the fourth paragraph on page one. Even as regards the events of just this year, 2015, Council has been at work since early spring in these serious matters. And I right next to that, I write wrong, inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
There were no serious matters being raised and dealt with in the spring.
Well, and when somebody, being you, did want to discuss some of what was going on, nobody wanted to take the plunge.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, and just to refresh people's memories, what was going on in early spring is we had enlisted the support of a denominational employee to help us with a visioning process.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody, some months before, came forward at a congregational meeting complaining about malaise and how their people weren't serving and there needed to be more people being gung-ho and on board with working in the church. And mm-hmm. so from there, we came up with the idea that it'd be good to have an internal survey and do a visioning thing.
Right.
That's what we were working on.
Mm-hmm. But see how it gives them credit with being proactive and industrious. They've mm-hmm. been trying to address things. He's already started to accumulate credit for them, or what's the word? Attribute this virtuous and sincere investment, which I didn't see at the time, but he has to couch what's to come in claims about their investment very early on and their attention to these things and the assertion that all these deep-seated, long-standing problems are old. But
right, this gets back to we have to justify ourselves. And one of the specific things we really have to come against is this idea that this was a hasty decision, that this went way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So now we've got to build the case and really paint the picture that, oh no, this has been going on a long time. And, you know, we've been working from dawn till dusk trying to deal with this stuff. And it's been going on for months and even years.
Well, it's interesting that he knew, right? It's interesting that he knew / they knew, whoever got together to write this with him. Maybe we should just say it's Keith. He knew mm-hmm. that if he said they were long-standing problems that had gone unaddressed, people might ask, yeah. Well, where was council then? So he has to say that council, even though every year or two it changes, and they didn't want to have anything to do with any insights that other people might have about what was going on spiritually in that church. You know, they weren't that invested, really. But he has to balance the claim that this has all been going on with these overstatements about how hard the council right. was working to try to address things.
Yeah,
and
yep,
so both those things are wrong. There weren't these long-standing issues with you, and the council wasn't that invested in addressing any issues that were there that mm-hmm. you wanted to address.
Right.
But he wouldn't know that because he wasn't there.
Yeah, yeah, that's the irony of it, isn't it?
Mm.
Both statements are inaccurate. Mm-hmm. Yep, the fact that there were long-standing problems and the fact that they were really invested, coupled with my attempts to try to get them to look at some things, you know, particularly in the winter, spring of 2015,
mm-hmm.
and nobody followed up with me.
Yeah.
And I made the offer, I actually repeated the offer several months after I initially made it and quoted the previous offer to say, I see this and this, and I think we really need to talk about it. Are you interested?
Yeah.
Nope. Yeah. So, I mean, just that paragraph is just loaded with inaccuracies, distortions, attempts to make themselves look good.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it is so inaccurate, so distorted. Even this statement, the last little part of the paragraph, also people were leaving Edna Church and council was listening carefully to them.
Yep.
People were leaving, so there were people heading out the door, or they had their hand on the doorknob, or they submitted their letter of resignation, and while they were doing that, they were explaining what their issues were, and council was listening carefully to them.
Right, but then again, there's no articulation of what they were saying.
Yeah, there was nobody leaving the church at that time and explaining why they were heading out the door. There was none of that.
Well, I think the people were leaving. He wasn't saying at that time. It was it's this implication that there was this trend of people breaking off of, probably since 2008, right? And all these people who were leaving had reasons in common. I think the people were leaving was not folk were leaving just then. Okay. But he was saying there was this trend.
Huh. Okay. Well, one of the former elders created a list of all the people that had left in the previous several years and documented all their reasons for leaving. And I don't think he came up with any on his list that had to do with me.
Right. Well, see, that doesn't matter, though.
Remember that?
The truth doesn't matter. But he has to include that in there because that was the desperate mantra that 13 kept repeating, and that a couple of the other elders eventually took up. This is why we have to do something, because people are going to leave and we can't afford for anybody else to leave. And 13 was very, playing very fast and loose with the stories of those who had already left. Since they weren't there to be questioned, he took advantage of their absence and he could ascribe to them whatever reasons he wanted. And it was convenient to say it was you, even though it wasn't true.
Yeah, but the judge, I think he came up with like 20 names across 4 or 5 years, and he got them off the prayer chain.
Mm-hmm.
And then he documented this one relocated, this one moved to North Dakota, this one got married, this one died. And I think he even said none of them who left because of the pastor, or some, you know, words to that effect.
Well, and one family was phoned up by somebody who disagreed with the council's decision, and she confirmed with that family that they left because of 13. So it was as far from you as you could get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, across those several years, you know, he missed one couple who left, and he didn't include them. I don't know why. Maybe they weren't on the prayer chain, but they did leave because of me, and they left in 2011. And I won't get into what their issues were, but yeah, that was a difficult situation. But yeah, they had issues with me, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They also had some of the issues of their own, too. So.
Like you said, we should leave it at that.
Did I say recently? What did I say recently?
That they have issues of their own, too. I was going to make a comment, but I'll resist. So he closes that paragraph with, "We knew we could not continue on our current course." I put, was bedeutet das? What was that exactly? What does that mean? What was the current course? People leaving, I suppose? Or the serious matters, the vague atmosphere, the vague aura of problems, undefined problems?
Yeah, the current course is having me as the pastor and doing what I was doing that they wanted changed, apparently.
Helpful, all these clear definitions of what he's talking about, all these explanations.
But I'm sure that the people who got this letter, who were in the middle, who didn't really know what was going on, but yet had this tendency to trust the council and trust people that they'd gone to church with for years, I'm sure that this letter was very satisfying to them, because it just says over and over, we tried and we did this and we've been dealing with this for years and this was very difficult for us and we didn't want to do it, and we know it was really, really agonizing and really painful for us, but we had to do it. I'm sure that satisfied a number of the people who were, like I say, in the middle.
Yeah, well, what could they do? But I would say that even increases the writer's shame, because it's taking advantage of them.
Yeah, people's either lack of knowledge or innocence or even gullibility a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And I don't mean that to be derogatory, but yeah, but people that I was on good terms with who never knew there was a problem, now all of a sudden they're reading, oh, well, this guy, there were issues with this guy for a long time and we just didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's
very sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of this repeating, a lot of the word choice, covering the asses and the bases is all deliberate. I hold it against him that he wrote this to mislead those people who weren't equipped to find out the truth.
Yep. Now I have to say, because we're gonna be wrapping it up in a couple minutes. I'm trying to watch the clock because of the time constraints that we had been under.
Yeah.
But before we wrap this up, and we'll probably pick this up in the subsequent interview.
Mm-hmm.
I did want to make a comment about several things right away in the letter to the congregation that parallel what Dr. Mullen pointed out in his post.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to his post, he mentioned how they begin with, "It is a sad day," blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And he said they brought attention to their own pain and how difficult it was for them. and how what we're trying to do here is see get people feel sorry for us rather than the person that was on the receiving end.
Right.
And so notice the parallels here with the letter. Mm-hmm. This has been a painful time for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an agonizing
step. Yep.
It's been one we actively tried to avoid taking. We tried so hard to avoid this. Mm-hmm. It's frustrating for us as a council.
Mm-hmm.
We can't talk in detail for everyone else's sake. Oh, we wish we could, but, you know, for the sake of everyone involved, mm-hmm. you know, we'll make the sacrifice.
Yep.
I mean, this is just in the first three short paragraphs.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're also the victims of gossip and accusations mm-hmm. in the middle of the frustrating and the Christian policy. We can't respond in detail. Yeah, it's all about them, their experience. But what's so ironic is it's the same thing as the classes whining about the position you put them in or what you've made them go through. They're not only the numerical majority, but they have all the power. You know, they were throwing their weight around and trying to bully you into whatever it was they wanted you to do before they decided that, you know, they couldn't kick you around fast enough or get you to submit fast enough, so they had to do the Article 17. But it is amazing that they make themselves into the victims. Yep.
Yeah.
They make themselves into the sufferers.
They make themselves the sufferers?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I was going to say is, next to every instance of this that I found or that jumped out at me after reading Dr. Mullen's column, I wrote self-pity in the margin. And so I wrote self-pity 1, 2, 3 on the first page. Then on the second page, it's right at the top, every aspect of this deeply painful and wearying process, mm-hmm. self-pity. This process is awful. Oh, the last line in that same paragraph, as awful it is, yep. as it has been to go through this, self-pity. Towards the bottom of the page, the council knew very clearly with painful awareness that some would leave Aetna Church. Self-pity.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we up to? 6 now. Oh, and then there's one on the last page.
We have grieved.
We ask for your trust and support.
Mm-hmm.
None of us as a council wanted this. We tried to avoid it. We have grieved over it. Self-pity. Yeah, we got the message. It was the hardest thing you ever had to do in your life, and you worked so hard to not have to do this, and I put you in this terrible position, and yeah, all the rest of it.
Yep. Well, we got
it.
There's plenty to say about that, deeply painful and wearying process, but I'll save that for next time. Yeah, it is quite amazing, and you wonder how many of them, by the end of it, would read through and believe that they experienced all this. Because it's really easy to trick yourself into thinking that such things are true, when, again, it is so self-serving and convenient.
Yeah, what are they? Are they heroic here?
Maybe tragic? Tragic heroic?
Should they get a medal of valor, or should they get a Purple Heart?
Well, it is more along the lines of postmodern heroism, right? It's not one of real self-sacrificing courage. It's just, you're only heroic by virtue of being victims.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you haven't really risen to the occasion. You claim over and over again that this was forced on you. Yeah, I wouldn't say Purple Heart for something like that, but maybe the participation ribbon.
Yeah, boy. You know, if you've took the an alternative point of view, would be, well, given that this was so arduous and painful and agonizing and frustrating and difficult and serious and frustrating and, you know, what other wearying and awful and grieving and grievous and all of that, given that all that's true, why didn't you just let the guy take another call? But why put yourself and him and the church through all this?
Yeah.
All this agony and arduous and frustrating and painful and, difficult and hard and, you know.
Well, it's interesting that he doesn't actually go through all the other steps they actively sought to avoid taking this one. But that, of course, wasn't ever on the list.
Yeah, did you ever think of that? Did it ever occur to you that there are more options here that you could resort to? I don't know. I laugh, but it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't really have to. Because this isn't really rationalizing or justifying, not truly offering an apologetic. It's just covering their bottoms mm-hmm. trying to deflect or put people off. Well, shall we pause it there and then come back to the council's hastiness and unfairness next time?
Yeah.
Actually,
certainly the letter bears more discussion.
Right. Well, there's plenty there. We're only through the first part of the first page, so. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll take a break there and resume next time.
Very good.
Okay. All right, everyone, plenty more shenanigans, deception, and incompetence to come. Join us for the next installment of Verivox, where we'll finish up talking about the letter from the council to the congregation. In the meantime, yisque fosque, God bless. Yeah.